Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation recorded live during the May 2006 Home Education Conference held at Southern Virginia University.
Let me just introduce a little bit about myself, and then we'll kind of get going. Convention of Brent DeGraff, teach at Leahona Academy. This is back in Pleasant Grove, Utah. And it's fun to come out here. My wife has roots here in Virginia. She doesn't bother to mention that her family then moved to Missouri. And that's where they ran into my family in the mid-1840s and ran us out to Utah. So I got my revenge, so I came back and married her, and so, you know. She won't admit that, but anyway. What we're going to talk about today is something called Reformation versus Restoration Education. But we need to define some terms real quickly here. What was the Reformation? Because the title of this is Reformation versus Restoration. What was the Reformation? Yes? In the back? Over here? She has one? Yes, what was it? Okay. What was the Reformation in history? We all pretty much kind of know that. That was in the Restoration. Hopefully, there's no real fuzziness on that. We all kind of know what we're talking about there. Okay. All right. That's what we're talking about. So you can kind of get an idea, a little bit of where we're going with this. We're talking about patching up how we're teaching our children, because it's a challenge, especially when they get into the teenage years. So patching up and giving them spotty or restoration and giving them exactly what they need. Now, is there a need for it? I'm going to give you a few statistics here. How many of you have teenage students now within the next 5 years? Okay. How many have teenage students now? Oh, okay, good. How many of you have ever run into any problem with your peers, somebody in the ward, wherever you happen to be, that wonders if your children are getting the right socialization that they should get? Yeah. I had somebody one time ask me if I wasn't really concerned about that our students and our children were not getting the same type of socialization that they get over at Pleasant Grove High School. And I try not to laugh. I think I smirked a little bit, but I said, well, I sure hope not. And they just looked at me like, what are you talking about? But if they ever ask you about socialization, this is a study that came out in 2003. 74% of the students, and there were 12,000 of them interviewed, grades 9 through 12. 74% of the students admitted they cheated on a test at least once during the year. What percentage do you think admitted that they lied to their parents during the year? 93%, and the other 7% were lying. 83% admitted that they lied to their teachers. 37% said they would lie to get a job. Nearly 1 in 6 had shown up for class at least one time during the year drunk. 68% said they had hit someone because they were angry. And 47% said they would use a gun if they got angry enough. And I got looking at that and I thought, well, that's the kind of socialization I want my child to go through. Well, obviously it's not. They went on and did a little bit more in this survey, and I'm going to see how well you do on this. So turn that sheet of paper you have over, on the little book that you have over, clear on the back page. And let's see, you write out the answer. Do I have more? No. Thanks, Rick, if you would. Rick will go get some over here. They were running some off, and it was going real slow. I think they were writing them, had a bunch of scribes going real fast. But I love the University of College. It's a great college. Just slow. Okay, let's see if you can answer this. Write it down. See if you can write the answer down, if you'll know what it was. The first Sputnik was what? How would you define? Just write this down, see if you can give me an answer. Define Sputnik in this real quickly. And I'm going to fly through these. There's only five of them. Who said, I only regret that I have but one life to live or to lose for my country? Who said, I only regret that I have but one life to lose for my country? Third, who is known as the father of the Constitution? How many branches of the federal government are there? Now, I know some of these questions will sound simplistic, but how many branches of the federal government are there? Next, name one of the rights that is named in the First Amendment. Name one of the rights that is named in the First Amendment. For all five? You'd been great in my class A lot of the kids do that. If we name three, can we? No. And last one. The first 10 amendments to the Constitution are known as what? The first 10 amendments to the Constitution are known as what? Okay, let's do this real quickly. Sputnik, what was it?
Russian unarmed
forces. Okay, very good. 7%. And this is, now let me tell you who this was. These are college seniors that took this test. Okay? And this was in 2005. 7% of college seniors knew the answer to that one. Who said, "I only regret that I had but one life to lose for my country"? Nathan Hale. 23% knew that. Now, I'm going to ask this. Now, be honest. How many of you knew that answer? Okay, we did better than 23%. How many of you knew Sputnik, what it was? Well, you guys are old. Okay. All right. Hey, I can say. Good. Okay, next one. Who was known as the father of the Constitution? James Madison. How many of you knew that one? Let's see. Be honest. Okay, we're doing better. Now this one. Oh, I'm sorry. 23% knew that Madison was the father of the Constitution. Okay. Yeah, it's 23 on both. Yeah. Same guys. Okay, how many branches of the federal government are there?
Three.
33% did not know. So over a third did not know that there were three branches of the federal government. Next one. And this is the one that scared me the most. Can somebody name a right or rights from the First Amendment? There are five. Go ahead.
Press.
Assembly.
Speech. Redress.
Religion and petition. Redress. Okay, good. How many of you had just one of those? Very good. 25% could not name even one. Couldn't name one. And the last one, what are the first 10 amendments known as? The Bill of Rights. Half of them did not know what that was. The question there was, who was the American general at Yorktown? William Tecumseh Sherman, U.S. Grant, Douglas MacArthur, or George Washington? Now, we're talking Yorktown here. But, and if you take a look at who it was given to, Amherst, Williams, Harvard, Duke graduates, only 22% could name the general. And if you look at the further survey, over almost 20% named, was it? No, it was, what were the five? MacArthur. You have God, Family, and Country. This is by President Benson. It's a talk that he gave. Now, you have the numbers, and these numbers will tell you that what you're doing is the right thing. But what you have here is President Benson explaining why he felt it was important. These are the things that President Benson said in a talk way back in, I believe it was 75, that we should be teaching our children when it comes to history. These are things that LDS children should learn. Not should learn, need to learn. As you'll see in just a minute, President Benson says that there are eternal consequences. Now think about it for just a second. There are eternal consequences for those that do not stand up for freedom and liberty here during their earthly time. And why not? Those that didn't stand up in the pre-existence are not here. That's how crucial and important. We called it free agency there. Here in the revolution, it's called liberty, freedom. But those that did not fight for it in the pre-existence are not here. If we don't fight for it here, what does that mean for the eternity? So there are eternal consequences. Now look at those for a second, would you please? And tally up how many of, in your personal family, how many of these your children know of President Benson's 13 points? How many of these they're being taught?
I just have to say, when I read over some of this stuff, I was one of those kids who graduated from high school not really understanding history. I did not understand it. I hated history class because I was taught it by football coaches.
And driver ed teachers, right?
Yes, and I did not learn it, and it's just amazing to
But me. It's not their fault because that's the way they're trained.
I know.
And I want to touch on that in just a second. Have you tallied up how many your children have learned? Now, there are eternal consequences, but there are also other academic consequences for those that do not learn this. In most colleges and universities across the nation, the class that has the highest dropout rate is a math, and then second is a science class. Science and math, the freshmen drop out just in huge chunks. Do you know what it is at Brigham Young University? The class with the highest dropout rate, and those of you at Leahona, parents, be quiet. What is it at Brigham Young University, which class has the highest attrition rate. What do you think? American Heritage Studies. Do you know what that is? That's where it's a course at BYU. It's a whole section where they combine religion and history together. It's blended totally together. Nothing is left out. And a gentleman by the name of Ralph Hancock, who writes a bunch of the material, has said that he sees from students, public school students, that come in after 12 years of having religion here and academics here, and having to blend them together, they cannot do it. They just can't do it. They've been so trained that it's here's religion and here are academics that they drop out of the class rather than find a way to fight through it because they just can't do it. I've had BYU professors mention, and we find it in Leah Honeth. We have a private academy in Pleasant Grove. We start our day, and BYU does, with a prayer at the beginning of class. And it's interesting to watch the students that come in first day, and BYU is the same, when everybody folds their arms to say the prayer, some of the students look around like, can we do this? Yeah, we can do this. It's okay. But it is a difficult thing when you are trained, now think of it, for 12 years to separate them. How do all of a sudden you bring them together? And it's a sad commentary when the highest dropout rate at Brigham Young University is a class that would bring religion and history together. And the good LDS students, seminary graduates, seminary presidents, young men and women going on missions, cannot blend them together. That's how effective the public school system has become, in doing what they do. So, your 13 points. You've tallied them up, I assume? Now, I'm going to ask you to put yourself on the spot, and I realize I am, but it's kind of the way I do things. And I don't mean to offend, let's see how we did. Has anybody taught your children all 13 of those points? Hey, this is the challenge that we face. Ezra Taft Benson. It is our own ignorance of our own history and our heritage of liberty that threatens us. It is our ignorance of the true nature of our enemy that threatens us. Our own lack of faith in freedom and ourselves. Our own lack of confidence in the greatness of America. That is the threat. Why is it a threat? Wish we had time to go into it, but like we mentioned before, the same fight for freedom, for free agency, for liberty. And I believe this morning there was a presentation on this. We all understand that. President Kimball, this is our challenge. We must train statesmen, not demagogues, men of integrity, not weaklings, who for a mess of pottage will sell their birthright. Men who will be trained so thoroughly in the arts of their future work and in the basic honesties and integrities and spiritual concepts that there will be no compromise of principle. This past Saturday, I'm a state delegate in the Republican convention. And I went and I listened to probably 95%. There were 1,800 delegates there, 95% of them were LDS. And I listened to the compromises that they were making. And I listened to some of our state senators, and I'm not going to go into them because you may like them, and I want you to go ahead and live in that illusion. But some of those men that you have heard about for a long time, even they have begun to compromise with the idea that at least they stay in positions where they can make a difference. What President Kimball said here is something we need desperately. You've probably all heard this one. J. Reuben Clark, I assume we all know who he is. The devil knows that if the elders of Israel should ever wake up, they could step forth and help preserve freedom and extend the gospel. How do we know that he already assumed, or already his belief was that the elders of Israel were already asleep? He said if they should ever wake up. Then he goes on to say, therefore the devil has concentrated and to a large extent successfully in neutralizing much of the priesthood. He has reduced them to sleeping giants. Joseph said that the Constitution would hang by a thread. And the question we ask our students, and I guess I would ask you, is this. If your student were part of that thread, how strong would this country be? How strong would the American Constitution and what it represents be? We believe it to be divinely inspired. George Albert Smith said it's as much a part of our religion as the Bible, the Book of Mormon, and any other book that we have. How strong would it be if it depended on your child, on your student? And if not, then what do you need to change to strengthen them for themselves, for the good of the country, and for the good of the church? Now, this is the question, and this is where the focus is going to be today, really. What do we use for curriculum? What do we teach them? Now, I'm probably going to mention some things here, and I am kind of blunt that way, so, and I don't mean to offend. I do it, I ask my wife, I offend her every day, but if you're using some of this curriculum, I will explain why I have difficulty with it. But we had a Father in heaven that loved us, and because of that, he gave us the restored gospel. He did not leave us with the Reformation. Think of it this way. Would you purposely teach your children partial truths? Now, I realize that finding curriculum that teaches the whole truth is difficult to find. But there are some things that you can use. There are some things out there that can be used, so you are not teaching your children Reformation education, part of the truth. We define it in three levels: secular, which is what you'll find in high school, and then the Reformation, which would be these materials here, which most of us have used out of necessity. Academically, they are excellent. Spiritually, they are deadly. If you teach a child a partial truth, they can't discern between what is the whole truth and what is a partial truth. They don't know. That's our job. 10 or 11 years ago, I opened up a Bob Jones science textbook to the very first page, and there was a definition of a scientist. And it said there that the scientist's responsibility was to discern and find truth. And then they gave an example of someone who could not discern truth. He had been deceived. Sorry, okay, deceived. And the example they used, anybody seen it?
Joseph Smith
and the Book of Mormon, how he's deceived. Why do our children need to see this? And as good academically as these are, they're better, yes, than the secular. You go to a high school and it will leave out all religion. But sometimes we settle for simply putting some Christianity or religion into our teaching and assume that's enough. It can be just as deadly as taking it out totally. And that's what I want to show you here in just a minute. Okay, Brigham Young. And this comes from a talk by Hugh Nibley. I'll think of the name of it in just a minute. Brother Nibley uses the statements I'm going to give you now to explain the very thing I'm going to talk to you about. It when we mix Zion and Babylon, truth with partial truth. Well, there is no such thing as a partial truth. What's a partial truth? It's a lie, okay?
Intentional.
But Brigham's statement was this: we cannot compromise between the way of Babylon and the way of Zion because they do lead in opposite directions. He went on to say, the main thing is that Babylon and Zion cannot mix in any degree. A Zion that makes concessions is no longer Zion. Very rare is the child that is a good, upright, righteous child that can mix with a bad group and pull one of them up with him instead of being sucked down. It does happen occasionally. But as parents, it scares us to death when we see that our child has friends that are not the type we would like them to have. Why? This is the reason. Usually, those students or those children pull that child down, and that is the way it works. Brigham also said, the Lord is sending forth his voice into the hearts of his people, crying unto them, stop. Stop your course. Cease to bring in and build up Babylon in your midst. And Brother Nibley, as I'm going to do now, compares this or says this is what we are doing in education when we do not teach our children the truth, restoration education. Okay, President Kimball said this in speaking to Brigham Young University. It is proper that every professor and teacher in this institution would keep his subject bathed in the light and color of the restored gospel and his subject matter perfumed lightly with the spirit of the gospel. How do you do that when you're talking about, and I'm going to take history today, how do you do that when you're talking about the American Revolution? How do you keep the American Revolution bathed lightly with the spirit of the gospel? How do you give them the secular that they get in public high school, where it takes this much and talks about certain battles, and maybe two or three, four pages about the American Revolution? You move on to a Bob Jones or an Abeka that includes the Christianity, at least, mention of God. How do you take them a step further and tell them what the prophets have said about the American Revolution, what the Book of Mormon says? How do you do that? That's the challenge that President Kimball gave the professors at Brigham Young. He went on to say, the faculty have a double heritage which they must pass along. The secular knowledge that history has washed to the feet of mankind, but also the vital and revealed truths that have been sent to us from heaven. Academics is crucial. I've seen too many private schools, LDS-based private schools, that are more like seminary classes. I worked in seminaries and institutes for years. My father did for 30 years. Your classroom in your home cannot be another seminary class. But what's the difference? How do you bathe lightly? How do you become have a double heritage where you have to teach the academics and you teach the spiritual? Too many private schools in Utah, the LDS ones, and too many homeschools are seminary classes. They can't be that. The academics are crucial. These kids have to learn so that they can move on and be put in positions where they can be of use and use what they have learned, what you've taught them. Part of the reason that you teach them yourself, and we teach them ourselves, is because we want them to learn correct principles. To do what? Just know them? Well, partially. But even more than that, to use them, to make a difference for what they were sent here. We talk about, I can't tell you how many times we've all heard that this is a royal generation, elect generation. Yes, they are, but royal and elect for what? To simply come down here and learn? No. To learn and then take it and use it. So they have to learn the academics so they can move on to college, so they can move into positions and be of use and change the course that we are taking. Last, Brother Holland said, we ought to more fully find a way to combine the best of traditional scholarship with the religious perspectives intrinsic to that scholarship and to the restored gospel. So how do we combine the two? Anybody have any thoughts? Basically, what they were telling Brigham Young University professors is you have to have the academics, but you have to have restored, not just Christianity, but restored gospel, restored truth blended in. How do you do that? How do we, if we're talking history, and that's where I'm going to focus today, how do you blend in to George Washington, to Long Island, Bunker Hill, Dorchester Heights? How do you blend not just Christianity? Because if you give them Christianity, you're taking them to the Reformation. Okay, this is what God did. Here's the story of what God did. But there's a bridge that needs to take place. And that bridge is that the students need to understand, and as an LDS student, this is what I need to do with this. How do we do that? Somebody had their hand up over here. How do you do it?
I was going to say, you have to first yourself see the hand of God in those things. Okay. And then know the revelation and see where that's going to next.
So we have to learn it ourselves.
Right.
Okay. Where do we find these? Where do you find this information, these stories, these... It is. A lot of the bridge is there. The stories themselves. This I taught for an educational institution years ago that wanted us to include religious stories in about history, for instance. But where do you find the stories? They're hard to find. Biographies, okay. But how do you get the LDS slant on it? Let's take a look at something. Last two. Jeffrey Holland said, I'm making an unabashed appeal for a distinctly LDS approach to education. What is that? And last, President Packer. Secular truths to revealed truths. Okay, now, if you'll take your hand out, let's take a look at what we need to do. And let me just put it this way. I'm sure there are lots of ways of doing it. I am not one of these people that says, this is the way to do it, this is the only way to do it. A methodology. This is the pattern you follow. This is the tree you have to follow. It branches out here. No. For somebody to stand up in front and say, this is the way to teach your children, this is the methodology that we use, and this is the best, how can you do that? Unless you know what every child, what their strengths and weaknesses are. I am not a believer, and that's not what I'm advocating here. What I'm talking is the information that you give them. Not how you give that to them. You know that for your own children. But the information is crucial. Anybody know what Dorchester Heights was? Battle that, or non-battle that took place? Yes. Go ahead. Yeah, it was a hill up that Washington sat up on top of, and the British were down below. Okay? Dorchester Heights, the first one is from a book called Call to Freedom by Holt, Reinhardt, and Winston. It's a textbook used in a lot of American history classes in high school and junior high, the year 2000. This is what it says about Dorchester Heights. And I'll let you kind of glance through those just a little bit. All three of these, I guess, I want to take a lot of time and read them all, but go ahead and glance through them. And this is what it says about Dorchester Heights in these three junior high and high school textbooks. This is the full extent of it. It's not just a portion. It's the whole. That's what it says. So let you glance through. Look at the middle one, the Massachusetts Siege of Boston came to an end. Glance at it, and if you're a parent, or excuse me, if you're a student, what do you learn from this? Take a look and pull out just a few of the points that you see here as you glance through. What points, as a student sitting in a classroom, no matter where it is, if you were using, and this is the secular level. This is not even the Reformation. This is a secular. This is what you'll learn in junior high and high school. What do you learn about the Battle of Dorchester Heights? Yes. Yep, real lucky they got there. Absolutely. Okay. And what else do we learn?
People worked really hard driving up there.
Okay, Knox worked really hard.
We had better weaponry.
Okay. We had better weapons than they did. Okay, we had a lot more of them too. Anything else?
The British retreated to Canada.
The British what?
Retreated to Canada.
Yeah, the British retreated. Anything else? You may learn the date. That's probably about what you're going to pull out of it. And think back to your high school test. You probably learned those were the questions. Who was the general? What did he have? And what was the date? That's secular. We have a collection, so you'll know where some of these stories came from. We have a collection of books that it's in the tens of thousands of dollars of old books that we've purchased to pull some of these stories out of. And I just want you to see the difference between a secular. And I'm not even going to Reformation. There's not time to do that, but a restoration. Take a look at this story, and I am going to read it, so please go with me. And I'm going to stop along the way, and we're only going to have time probably to use one example today, I guess. Go down to where it actually starts, 1776, January and February, second to last paragraph from the bottom. Everybody find that? 1776, January and February, during those months, the mind of General Washington was deeply engaged in a plan of crossing on the ice and attacking the British in Boston and taking possession of Dorchester Neck. So you understand there's a hill up above Boston. Now, with respect to the taking of Dorchester Neck, there were circumstances which fell under my knowledge and sphere of duty, which were so evidently marked by the hand of an overruling providence that I think proper to relate them. Now, if you haven't looked already, you have to stop right there and go, wait, who said the hand of overriding providence? And you'll find that it's a man by the name of Putnam who was there. This is the man, it's his personal account of what happened. Okay? And he himself says God had a hand in this. He goes on and said, as soon as the ice was thought sufficiently strong for the army to cross over, or perhaps rather before, a council of general officers was convened on the subject. What their particular opinions were, I never knew, but the brigadiers were directed to consult the field officers of their several regiments, and they again to feel the temper of the captains and subalterns. While doing this, I was invited to dine at headquarters. And while at dinner, okay, let's go to dinner. They left out a page on mine, too. Thank you. General Washington desired me to tarry after dinner, and when we were alone, he entered into a free conversation of the subject of storming the town of Boston. I'd like you just to put a little mark right there by that. General Washington desired me to tarry after dinner. That it was much better to draw the enemy out to Dorchester than to attack him, and there's some typos here because this was not the finished text, in Boston, no one doubted. For if we could remain ourselves on that point or neck of land, our command of the town and harbor of Boston would be such as would probably compel them to leave. But the cold weather which made a bridge of ice for a passage into Boston had also frozen the earth to a great depth, especially in the open country, as was the hills on Dorchester Neck, so that it was impossible to make lodgment there. Lodgment, they meant a fort. They meant barricades to protect themselves. So if you would put a little mark there, please. And then he goes on down and go to the paragraph, please, where it starts off. And now mark those singular circumstances. And now mark those singular circumstances which I call providential. Mark it again, please, where he said, I call providential. Remember, first-hand accounts, primary document, primary sources. I left headquarters with another gentleman, and in our way came by General Heath's, another general who happened to be there. I had no thought of calling until I came against his door. Put a mark there, would you please? I had no thought of calling. And then I said, let us call on General Heath, to which he agreed. I had no other motive but to pay my respects to the general. While there, I cast my eye on a book which lay on the table lettered, Mueller's Field Engineer. Put a check there, please. I immediately requested the general to lend it to me. He denied me. I repeated my request. He again refused and told me he never lent, I think, his books. I then told him that he must recollect that he was the one who at Roxbury, in a measure, compelled me to undertake a business, which at the time I confessed I never... Anyway, put a mark right there. It's just saying that he convinced the general to loan him the book because the general owed him a favor. Continue on. I arrived at my quarters about the dark. It was the custom for overseers of the workmen to report every evening what progress had been made during the day. When I arrived, there were some of them already there. I put my book in the chest, and if I had time, did not think of looking in it that night. The next morning, as soon as opportunity offered, I took my book from the closet and, looking over the contents, found the word chandeliers. What is that? Thought I. Put a check there, please, or mark it somehow. It is something I never heard of before. But no sooner did I turn the page what was described with its use, but I was ready to report a plan for making a lodgment on Dorchester Neck. Now look at his next comment. Infidels may laugh if they please. So you non-believers may laugh if you please, he's saying, but he goes on. In a few minutes after I had myself determined, they went on. Basically, they went to the general. They proposed what to do, and they built chandeliers. Now, let's go back and take a look. It tells you here down below what a chandelier is. Very simply, it's a movable wall. It had posts here, and you filled it up with logs or with whatever you wanted in the middle. And you could move it. And if you had to move the wall along, there were sections that are about, well, how long does it say here? 10 feet long, 6 inches square. So 10 feet long. Fill it up so that the British couldn't fire at you. Because you see, you have to remember this. The next morning, the British were getting up. If we couldn't drive anything into the ground, if we couldn't dig embankments to protect ourselves, there we were on the side of the hill and the British would slaughter us. But what happened to allow this man to discover what nobody else, even the British, had discovered up until this point? Something called a chandelier. Was it an accident? Because, you see, they built these chandeliers, and the next morning, when General Howe got up, he looked up there on the side of the hill, and here was a whole line of chandeliers, 10 feet long, about 10 feet high, filled with logs and straw and anything else to keep basically a movable wall, a movable fort. He said they'd done more in one night than his men could have done in a month. What caused this to happen? How did he find this out? Now go back and look at your points along the way. What's the first little check you have? We have to fly through this, and I apologize for that. What is the first point that you have? He was at dinner. And this is what I ask, and I challenge my students, and I would challenge you to challenge your students. And if you take a look at the end of this story, I have these all 7 points listed, but I don't want you to look there. Don't look there yet. It's there. But I challenge them to think, ask this, was that providential or was it luck? You decide. He invited him to dinner. What if he had not invited him? And we're going to move on. We'll make sense of all this. What's the second check you have there? Okay, the lodgements. Okay, so Washington talked to him. Why did Washington talk to him? Why did Washington talk to Putnam? Here everybody's sitting at the table. Why did General Washington choose to talk to Putnam above everybody else? Was he lucky? Was he fortunate? Was he blessed? Charmed? Whatever word you want to use for it. Have them begin to look at things a different way. Third, what's your third check you have there? What was it? Call it providential. So then you have to go to this. And this is for the real doubting student. Here's a man who was there. It's not somebody retelling this story. It's not a modern-day historian. This is Putnam himself saying, this was God did this. He did this. And that is crucial, that they see that people that were there, not somebody they did, not just us as parents even. Okay, what's the fourth one?
He didn't plan to stop by there.
Yeah. So he was walking along. It's nighttime. He's tired. And he just decides with no forethought to knock on the door. Providential or luck? There'll come a time when you start adding these up that even the most doubting of students is going to start adding these up and go, well, I guess that could be luck, and that could be luck, and that could be luck. And now you're on your fourth or fifth luck. And pretty soon they're going to have to say, but you're not done yet. What's the next check you have? Didn't he loan him the book? Did he normally loan books out? Nope, didn't normally do that. Why did he loan it to him? Yeah, the very guy that he happened to stop at the door with, and he happened, okay, luck or yes?
So Clinton was probably the only man who could have got that.
You're exactly right. And that is the point that we need as parents to make. Putnam is probably the only man who could have gotten that book from General Heath at that point. Thank you. Next one. What's the next check?
Chandelier.
The book just opened up to the page where it said chandelier. Man, he was lucky. Excuse me. Washington was lucky. And he was charmed. And he was fortunate. And nature's whatever blessed him, whatever. Anything but God. But it just happened to open up. And he looked at the word that he'd never seen before. And somebody mentioned he was an engineer. But he'd never seen this word before, chandelier. Obviously, Washington didn't know what it was. General Howe of the British didn't know what it was. But it was in this book. Yes. Excellent. Good point. There was a truth. There was something needed there. It wasn't spiritual, but well, for the guys that survived, it was. Yes. Yes. Good point. There are so many. When you're allowed to bring religion into it, there are so many lessons you can teach along the way, and that is why I say there is no one methodology that works. For some children may be ready to hear that; others won't. But the material you give them, yeah. I mean, there's not one that you can say this works for all the children. No, how can you say that? That's the very reason a lot of us pulled our kids out of public school. So now to say, okay, now here's a methodology that does work for everybody. No, it doesn't. It works for some. But the information that you plug into those different methodologies, that is crucial. And if you take a look, go to the back again, and I didn't number these things, and I don't have time, unfortunately, to go into these. Maybe I'll do it tomorrow morning when I'm speaking. I'll just carry this on. Take a look where it says Declaration of Independence. It's like the fourth or fifth page. No, it's the third from the back. Fourth from the back. I'll give it to you. I'll get back to you. Everybody there? You find it? It says Declaration of Independence on it. Everybody got it? There's the secular. The next one down is Reformation. Okay, this is what a Becca would say. Well, it's directly out of a Becca. So the founding fathers, according to Prentice Hall, the top one, were men who approved the Declaration, and those who later created the federal government were just that, patriarchs, heads of households with many dependents. When they talked about equality and popular sovereignty, they meant equality and sovereignty for gentlemen of property and high standing in society. But once these ideas were let loose, neither the founders nor the generations of white men could control them. I'm not even going to go there, okay? I just...
It's even boring.
Because I read it. But then you go to a Becca, which is better. Reformation, it's better than the secular. He said in the second sentence there, it openly recognized that God created all men. And then it goes on. That's good. But for LDS kids, that's not enough. Take a look at Restoration. President Brigham Young spoke from Spelson, every prophet. B.H. Roberts. Brother Roberts says here, he talks about the special, unique role that the Declaration played and what the responsibilities of members are. And that is the bridge that you need to make. These children have to understand this is a unique and a blessed generation. But we had better be giving them the information that they need. I tell the students in my class, I want them to develop a testimony of history. And that's a strange thing to put together, I guess. A testimony of history. When we're talking American history especially, but why should it be strange? We're talking about God's promised land. And the most important thing that they can do is be righteous. Why? Because there was only one condition that was given to the Jaredites, only one condition given to the Nephites, Lamanites, only one condition given to the pilgrims when they landed in this country. Serve the God of this land. That's it. The most patriotic thing that our children can do is to be righteous. And how do you tie in spiritual and religion to patriotism? It's this. They need to see the stories. They need to see how God had a hand all the way through. And that's why I've included, and you take a look at on your own, story after story after story in here, and that's what we use when we teach. Everybody loves to hear stories. 5-year-olds love to hear stories. 95-year-olds love to hear stories. But stories that show God's hand. And then, and you can find it if you go onto the website. What's the site? LDS.org. And just type in Dorchester Heights. Just type in Valley Forge or any you want, and you will see the stories there, the comments by the general authorities about that battle, about that person. So they can see, and I'll talk about this tomorrow morning, they can see that the same bridge you're making, God had a hand, the general authorities are also making. We include it in our books. We want our children to read it. Let me just finish with this. These children have to be prepared. They have to understand God had a hand. But they have to see the stories. They have to know and see where it happened. You have to stop along the way and say, look, think, look, think, look, think. Patriotic means being righteous. We have kind of a sad joke in my classroom. We talk about what will happen if we are not a righteous nation. And I made the comment kind of off the cuff one morning. I said, you know, if we don't, and I paused and I said, well, do you know a Jaredite? And they thought about it for a second. And went, no. Why? Because they weren't righteous. Why weren't they righteous? Because they were not taught. And then one of the kids about 2 months later said, do you think it'll ever be, do you know a Jaredite and an American? But you take a look, think about that. God cannot lie. He can't. He has told us that anyone who possesses this land, if we do not serve the God of this land, we will be swept off. And if you don't believe it, there's the question. Do you know a Jaredite? They're not here. But we have an incredible responsibility. I cannot tell you how much I admire what you're doing. We have a responsibility to give them the information, but the whole truth, not just including religion. Read what the general authorities say about, do you know that the general authorities have commented about Dorchester Heights, Long Island, Valley Forge? Every single one of those battles and the great personalities, you can find talks and comments by the general authorities about them. And your students will then see what the general authorities have now said about the importance of this battle and why it happened and why it was providential. So you have you telling them. You have the storytelling, and then you have the general authorities telling them. With that, we are then giving our children what they need. They will go out with the academics. They will remember what happened far better than if you had simply said, and you read the secular, it happened on whatever date, and it happened here, and this is how it was the ammunition, and that means nothing to them. It is simply disseminating information, dates, names, places, events. You have to make that journey from the head to the heart. You have to touch the heart. And stories that bear witness of God's hand will do that for you. We have to teach them the same way that the 2,000 stripling warriors were taught. But we have to teach them so that, as that scripture says, they obey with exactness. Because of that, they survived and they won. How do we teach them to obey with exactness? We touch their hearts. We build their testimony. So it's not just here that they're obeying from the heart and the spirit. Teach them the stories. Show them the providential occurrences. Read to them, let them read the comments of the general authorities. That is the whole truth, and that will touch their hearts. And I bear this testimony to you in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Amen.
LDS Home Educators is a non-profit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.